items. Carla, would you please read Council Item 132? It's a second reading only.
Declare certain city-owned real property as surplus and authorize the transfer of the property to a qualified private developer to further the goals and objectives of the Portland Brownfield Program.
A vote only. Thank you.
Fritz?
Well, thanks to Commissioner Fish and Directors Mike Abate and Dean Marriott for their work on this project. I think it's a good investment of public property. And cleaned up a brownfield and using that investment to stimulate more development in St. John's, which is one of the premier communities in Portland, in my opinion. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I wasn't here last week, but I did was able to listen to some of the discussion of this exciting project. And having one time been in charge of BES and Parks both, I know how the city has wrestled with this property, this brownfield property in St. John's, and this looks like a very exciting proposal, the two-thirds project. So I'm really looking forward and want to thank BES and Parks, and probably PDC had a role in there too, and the developers for really taking this on. This looks very exciting. Aye.
Novick?
I just want to note that this project is so good that it actually generated a positive article in the Oregonian, which is extraordinary. Aye.
Fish.
A bunch of thank yous. I want to thank the members of the advisory committee for the hundreds of hours they put into this. I want to thank the neighborhood associations from St. John's and Cathedral Park. I want to thank all the citizens who were involved in the public involvement process. In particular, I want to thank Marvita Redding, who's here, Jen Bildersee, Kevin Cavanaugh of Gorilla Development, and Michael Kohlhoff, the St. John's Brownfield Steering Committee member. This is a great Brownfield story, and we've got lots of other stories ahead that will unfold. Thanks for your great work. Aye. The matter passes. Carla, we're going to go to the two pulled items. Let's start with Council Item 122.
Authorize a contract and provide for payment for the construction of the Southeast Clinton Carruthers System Improvements Project, number E08662. For $2,480,000.
Thank you. We originally pulled this from consent, and I just have some brief comments. Almost every week, the Bureau of Environmental Services brings consent items related to its capital improvement plan before the council. And many of these projects are in the millions of dollars. This portion of the Tabor to the River project, we think, provides a very good window into how we're managing green infrastructure generally and how projects like this save ratepayer dollars. And so we asked Bill Ryan, our chief engineer, to come in and give you a few minutes of remarks about this project and why we're so bullish on it. Bill, thanks for joining us.
And thank you, commissioners. I think this is an excellent project-level example, as the commissioner said, of how we're saving money, improving watersheds, and doing the best thing that we can to maintain our infrastructure. The Clinton and Carruthers project is part of the much larger Tabor to the River program, and it was initiated to address high sewer basement backup risk. Lots of properties in the area have a condition where in heavy rainstorms, sewage actually does back up into their basements. There's also a number of deficient pipes, structurally deficient pipes, pipes which are soon to fail or have already failed. And we've also got a circumstance where, because of the development over the years in this area, as well as much of the city of Portland, we have denigrated the watershed in the vicinity. We're trying to get cold, clean water back into the groundwater. The Clinton and Carruthers project runs from about Southeast 20th Avenue and straddles Division. We actually delayed this project in order to not further impact the traffic conditions on Division Street. So we're letting it out now because we know that by summer we should have things pretty well cleaned up on Division. And it goes all the way to the east to Cesar Chavez. You can see on these maps that it includes pipe replacement for those old and aging pipes, as well as several Green Street facilities and some pervious pavement. As much of the Tabor to the River area is, this is in a combined sewer system, and that's a sewer system where the stormwater mixes with the sanitary sewage and quite often overwhelms the capacity of the sewers. It's also a fairly old part of the sewer system. As you can see, the average age of the pipes that we're replacing is 102 years, and we're replacing about 3,800 feet of pipe in this project. As I mentioned, this is an opportunity to integrate green infrastructure with the gray infrastructure in order to come up with the best and most cost-effective solution to these problems. We're adding 24 Green Street facilities, two blocks of pervious pavement, and we're going to, by doing that, keep 1.8 million gallons per year out of the gallons of stormwater per year out of the sewer system. I think most surprisingly to the public is that by integrating the gray and the green, by actually building green facilities to get the stormwater out of the system, we can save money. And this is the best example. The whole Tabor to the River program is the best example of that. Because in 2000, we actually developed a pre-design using our previous techniques, which was almost entirely gray infrastructure. We put together the entire project with a parallel pipe system that we would build, a new stormwater system, which would separate the stormwater out of the sewers and thereby reducing the condition of basement flooding. The cost, the projected cost for that program was over $144 million. In 2007, we had already had quite a number of these integrated projects where we were integrating the gray and the green, and we decided to revisit the pre-design and look at what it would cost to address all of the aging pipe infrastructure and to address the stormwater, the excess stormwater that was in the system, and at the same time bring improvements to the watershed. And what we found was that because we weren't putting in an entirely parallel pipe system, constructing a lot of gray infrastructure that would be separate and new, we were able to save over $60 million on the Tabor to the River program as a whole. I think that's an excellent example. We have several others of cost savings through the integration of gray and green.
Concludes our presentation. Any questions from council colleagues?
Just a question about the new pipes. And to be honest, I can't remember whether I heard this from BES or from Water several months ago. But one thing that we're concerned about is the earthquake resilience of all of our systems. And I've been told that, you know, Japan has this fancy new pipe material that will survive any earthquake, and the pipes that are 100-year-old pipes will crumble in a tiny earthquake. So I just want to know if you have any information about the earthquake sensitivity of the new piping.
The earthquake sensitivity is much more significant in areas where you are along water lines or along shorelines, okay, and you are likely to have lateral spreading. In conditions like this, where you're a little bit away from the river, the kind of pipe that we typically use is actually some of the best pipe to use from an earthquake standpoint. As part of our work in resilience and our planning for resilience, we're actually mapping all of those areas that are prone to a lot of movement in an earthquake, and we will segregate those out and design different kinds of facilities to be constructed in those areas.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And this is probably a discussion for another time. Well, it is. But I know you're working on the equity issues of where the backups occur and where the most vulnerable people are, so I appreciate that work and look forward to that. And Commissioner Fish, thank you for pulling this item and having this presentation. It's really important for people to understand not only is this a better way of doing things, it's a less expensive way of doing things.
Thank you very much. Carla, anyone sign up to testify? Joe, come on forward. We'll stick around if there's any questions, if you would.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. And just an observation, there were 15 items on the agenda today. Now, 11 of them were emergencies. That's not a good indicator that you guys know what you're doing. You keep bringing up all these emergencies.
Mr. Walsh, this is not an emergency item.
Don't interrupt me, please. I have 3 minutes to say what I'm going
to
say. Don't interrupt me.
To address this item.
It is rude to interrupt, and I will transmit my statement to this item if you keep your mouth shut. There are 15 items on the agenda, 11 of them are emergencies. One of them is not, this one, which I am really excited about because I don't like the emergencies one. That was my point without the interruption. The second part of this, this was part of the consent agenda originally, and Commissioner Fitz says he pulled it. And I agree with that, because when I looked at it this morning, I also pulled it. The reason that I pull these items off the consent agenda is we have a right to listen to the discussion that you just had. There seems to be some kind of limit that we should put on a consent agenda. If you guys are going to spend $2 million, we have a right to hear what you're going to do with it. And my objection to this is not the program itself. It's not the work itself. It's that PES is paying for it. And you think that PES does not bother your general fund? Yes, it does. This is a tax on people, and they don't even know they're going to be taxed. Because eventually, you're going to have to pay for this. And who pays for BES? And who pays for the water department? The ratepayers. And nobody knows what's going on unless you have this discussion. So here's my suggestion. When you're going to spend over $1 million, over $2 million, over $3 million, you guys decide what level, what's a reasonable level, that we have discussions, and you don't put it on a consent agenda. That's my objection to this. It sounds like a good program, but if it's so good, then pay for it out of the general fund and stand before the voters and say, this is a good program, we need it, we're going to pay for it. And don't try to hide it on a consent agenda, and then later on, pull it. Because there's no sign-up sheet for this. Nobody knows about this until the last minute. Where's the sign-up sheet? It doesn't exist. So when I walked in here this morning, I could not sign up to talk about this. I had to pull it. So I had to be a pain in the ass for the people of this city to understand what you're going to do with $2.5 million of their money.
Ms. Walsh, the matter goes to a second reading. Carla, would you please read Council Item 124?
Accept a grant in the amount of $1 million from the Portland Development Commission and authorize an intergovernmental agreement for construction of the Southeast 122nd Holgate to Ramona Sidewalk Infill Project.
Commissioner Novick.
This was originally on consent, so I didn't think I'd have the opportunity to read the summary that PBOT staff and my staff have prepared, but I'm very pleased about this item, so I'm happy to do that. The 122nd Avenue area has experienced considerable change in recent years. The area dramatically transformed from a low-density, semi-rural, and suburban community to one of the fastest-growing areas in the city. While some street and pedestrian infrastructure was built along with the new development, today the corridor is a patchwork of infrastructure lacking a comprehensive network of streets and sidewalks. With the sizable increase in population, more and more residents walk and take transit through the area, increasing the need for a safe pedestrian environment. The East Portland Action Plan, adopted by the Portland City Council in 2009, identified Southeast 122nd area as a prime location for a pilot study to explore land use, infill development, and infrastructure issues. The resulting Southeast 122nd Avenue study, a pilot project of the Portland Plan, identified specific recommendations for improvements.
In developing the study, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability assembled several community working groups to advise and provide guidance to inform the recommendations. The study was completed at the end of 2010. While the study and community outreach is being conducted, PDC initiated a public process to develop an action plan to identify and prioritize infrastructure projects within the LTC-URA. The findings of the LTC-URA Transportation Task Force identified and the LTC Urban Renewal Advisory Committee endorsed Southeast 122nd Avenue between Foster and Powell as a high priority to invest PDC funds in infrastructure projects. Subsequently, PDC allocated $225,000 for design and engineering of sidewalk and crossing improvements with the intention of investing $1 million in construction. The construction of this project will provide a complete sidewalk system from Powell to Foster and Southeast 122nd.
Any questions from council? You're here to thank good. You very much.
This, good news.
This is good news. Has anyone signed up to testify?
Mr. Lightning, I believe, wanted to testify.
Lightning, welcome.
My company is Portland Lightning Watchdog, and my name is Lightning. One of the things I like about Commissioner Novick is that when you present something, you present facts and you present numbers. And that's what I want. I want the facts. I want the numbers. I want the transparency. I commend you on getting your grants. I commend you on your projects. One of the issues that was brought up today was, where do we get all the money? Where do we get all the money for the parks? Where do we get all the money for, say, the potholes, the roads, various things? One of the issues I had today, and I'm tying this all together, is on that St. John's Brownfield project. I have a real problem with any property being sold for $1. And the reason why I do is that when you declare a property surplus, it's my understanding the policy states you must do an appraisal on the property to determine market value. Now, if you appraise that property at, say, $400,000 to $600,000, and you sell it for $1, and you say that's a public benefit or a public good, I have a problem with that. We have two commissioners up here who both need funding for parks, both need funding for roads, and the brownfield, I feel, is the potential to fund a lot of those projects. So for us to think that we have ample funds to transfer over to developers for their own private property at $1, I don't like to see that happen, because it is stated also that you can refer that money back to the general fund, and again, the commissioners can submit and apply that toward their projects. Again, we saw that happen on MLK, on Trader Joe's. Discounted the property, $2,300,000. Again, we discounted the property at St. John's, possibly $400,000 to $600,000. That's close to $2.5 to $3 million. Now, when we're here talking about these parks, talking about these roads, the city is not in a position to be a philanthropist. They don't have that kind of money. You are in debt. When you are in debt, you grab all the money you can from all different directions and make sure these various projects are funded. You do not have the ability to give away public properties, city properties, at $1. I find that a problem. I want to see more appraisals done on these surplus properties up front. I want the policies to be followed. And I think there's a tremendous potential of 900 acres of brownfield properties to look at, analyze, and to see how we can transfer the sale of these properties back to the general fund and get all these different projects that the commissioners want to have funded. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Just, Lightning, because you're always very thoughtful in your testimony, just one clarification.
Yes.
The Bureau of Environmental Services received the property at no cost.
Yes.
And had there been any additional consideration for the property, it would have remained within BES and not by law been transferred to the general fund. So I just want to be clear about that.
Okay. And if I might state, that property was transferred in 1976. And again, there was no taxes paid on that property. Again, there was environmental cleanup of 200 plus thousand. Again, we have losses. It comes down to that operating and maintenance cost that has to be calculated in to that overall sales price to make sure we don't take a loss and we are taking a loss right now at $1. And nobody can tell me that developer couldn't come in and pay a reasonable market price, hold that development property for 10 years, which is in the agreement, and then fund that money if he ever sells it back to the general fund. So we don't have to give away the money to offer an incentive to these developers.
So appreciate your comments.
Yes.
And thanks for testifying.
Okay, thank you.
This is an emergency. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Very happy to be seeing a sidewalk being constructed from Holgate to Ramona on Southeast 122nd. Congratulations, Commissioner Novick. Aye.
Saltzman?
Yes, very important pedestrian infrastructure, pedestrian safety infrastructure. So congratulations. Aye.
Novick?
Thank you, colleagues. Aye.
Fish?
Nice job. Aye. And any other matters for the good of the order? Hearing none, the hearing is closed.
Good show there.